Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
It's time for the Dr. Lee Vinoker Show. Here's Dr. Lee.
Hi, and welcome to the show, Health from the Outside In on Radio MD. My next topic, an important topic, because we, I know, as physicians and many people just don't want to deal with end-of-life care, and it always is getting a bad rap. We spend most of our money in the U.S. on that. My next guest is an expert in that field, Dr. Charles Blanke. He's a professor of medicine at the Knight Cancer Institute at Oregon Health Science University, and he's done also a lot of research in targeted types of therapies for different types of gastrointestinal cancers. So welcome, Dr. Blanke, and thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's really my pleasure.
So the question, and when I had read about it and read the article in JAMA Oncology, so end-of-life chemotherapy, and, you know, I imagine it's a tricky topic. It's in the news sometimes. That beautiful young woman, Brittany Maynard, made people discuss end-of-life care because she decided that's not what she wanted at the end. So tell me a little bit about this idea. And when you say chemotherapy, are you speaking specifically of a lot of the very toxic chemotherapies that we have today?
Good questions, all. So we're really referring to patients who have incurable cancer and have already had some treatment. And in the particular study we're going to talk about, that treatment indeed was chemotherapy, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the most toxic treatment. There's intravenous forms, there are pill forms that are less toxic, and now that we're in the age of personalized medicine, we're even seeing a lot more use of biologic therapy.
Right.
But what we're really talking about is sort of, you know, not focused treatment like radiation or surgery, but general treatment for those with incurable cancer, but who otherwise are expected to pass away from their disease within 6 months.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I imagine as an oncologist, you know, it's a difficult thing, especially if you're looking at someone. I mean, did you see obviously age differences, right? I mean, it makes intuitive sense to everybody. If you're like 75 years old, and you have a very aggressive stage 4 cancer versus if you're 35 or 40 and you do. Did you look at those differences in the study?
You know, it's definitely mostly true, and I'm speaking from my practice more so than the study, that certainly the people who are very elderly, who have a number of other medical problems, say kidney failure or whatever, might be willing to forego it. But I will tell you that you would be surprised by the number of young patients who decide not to take chemotherapy. I certainly was as a treating physician.
Well, and it's a little bit ironic because people, if you've been well most of your life and never been sick, and then you get an aggressive cancer, I mean, that's why I always, as a physician, when it was, you know, everyone discussed, oh, we're spending all our care at the end of life. Yeah, if you were a healthy person your whole life, and then you suddenly got sick with cancer, yeah, all of my medical care, I mean, I can count on one hand times I go to a doctor. I mean, I don't even go every year like I should, maybe. But if I got sick and got cancer, yeah, that's where all of my money would be spent at the end. So in that respect, it kind of, you know, makes a little bit of sense. But how do you tell people who feel like they're going to fight to the end? And some people feel responsible fighting for their families, you know? Like,
right. Well, oh.
Go ahead.
You made immensely good points. But in this particular case, when we talk about cancer patients who are near end of life, you know, they've spent a fair bit of cash already on chemotherapy, so we're not talking about their first 40 years when they had, you know, medical bills for a sprained ankle. We're talking about people who either get super expensive drugs or worse, it's quite clear that they are dying, and yet they wind up in the intensive care unit or they wind up, you know, on a breathing machine. Really, really expensive technology that has no chance of helping them. But you also hit the nail on the head. I think patients get immense pressure from families, and they themselves want treatment if there's any potential benefit. And you know this, there have been studies that have been done showing that a substantial minority of patients would take chemotherapy knowing it made them sick if it made them live a single day longer.
Yeah. Well, it's a hard thing. I mean, my mom died of non-small cell lung cancer, so she wasn't a smoker. And, you know, at the end, she didn't go in the hospital, and she said she didn't need hospice. She had me, which was very flattering.
It is flattering.
And so she died at home in my bed, and the doctor came to the house. But, yeah, at the end, there was still, you know, there was one of those biologics, which he said, you know, it's not that toxic. It doesn't. And her oncologist was surprised that she actually died the next day after she saw him, because he thought, you know, she really didn't look that bad, which was a little bit surprising. But how about these biologics that are these targeted therapies? The one that you you worked on one. You were instrumental in the development of.
Yeah, so we had a drug called imatinib, or Gleevec is a popular name.
Yeah.
My partner here at OHSU actually used the drug in leukemia and achieved a 99.7% remission rate,
right,
which was amazing. And then we found a stomach cancer, which obviously is a completely different type of tumor, but had the same underlying genetic abnormality. And we took a disease that was 100% fatal and put about 90% of patients in remission. Mm. So it's absolutely true that these targeted, personalized biologics are just a miracle. And they tend to be less toxic as well as more effective. But we're still talking about patients who've been through the whole gamut,
mm-hmm,
including some of these biologics, at least in theory.
Right. So most
eventually,
of these,
even most of those fail. Sorry.
Right. Yeah. So that's what you're saying. It's not like they've tried chemo, tried this, and then, you know, there was a biologic. And I can see if it's a biologic and it's a pill and you can take it at home and it's not that toxic doing it. But, you know, I mean, and a whole nother subject for a show would be, why are these drugs so expensive
in
the U.S.? I mean, that's a whole nother issue that we can talk about because, right, are we the only government that doesn't negotiate with the pharmaceutical companies or
something? Well, and it's that simple. I mean, the fact that it's illegal to negotiate, I think, vastly contributes to that high cost. But you're right. We could probably talk about that for 3 hours.
Right. But so what's the answer to this? I mean, you know, it is hard to tell people. And when you look at even all these metastatic studies, even people that are considered do well, what do they get? A couple weeks more, you know?
Well, it depends when in their life you're talking about treating. If you're talking about treating early, it could be months or years.
Right,
if it's late in their life, it's nothing. Or as you pointed out, one recent pancreatic trial showed a benefit of 12 days. Not worth it, in my opinion, but it's not my decision to make.
Right. So, I mean, so the key is, one, it's expensive. Two, it's hard. But, you know, it's hard to tell a family member if you can get one or two more days with a loved one. You know, I'm sure everybody would want that. But then again, if that loved one is slumped over the toilet, vomiting and sick as a dog and feels miserable, I mean, I don't think anyone wants their family member to do
that. Bingo. I think there are other ways that a medical oncologist or any treating physician can help the patient near the end of life. And they should focus in on helping with symptoms and away from giving toxic chemotherapy.
Yeah, I think that that's a good point. And, you know, we just have in this country, it's such a different attitude towards death. And, you know, we're talking about cancer here, but this could be a serious infection, you know, with an elderly person in an intensive care unit or something like that. So it's not necessarily cancer. Right?
That is absolutely true. We really are very uncomfortable with having relatives die in this country.
Yeah, and it is, and yet what's interesting to me, and like I said, maybe a whole show on end-of-life issues, is that if you ask most people, they wouldn't want to die in a hospital bed or in ICU hooked up to all machines. They want to die at home, yet, you know, there's this dichotomy with how long you're fighting and when you're fighting, and you look at family members and think, you know, you want to be there for them. So very important topic. I want to thank my guests. This is the Dr. Lee Vinoker Show on Radio MD, where feeling good starts with looking good. Stay tuned into your health.